Welcome in to Locked On Nets. On today's show, I will preview tonight's Game 3 between the Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers. I'll be talking adjustments. I'll be talking press conference comments. I'll be talking about what the atmosphere will be like at Barclays. So stay tuned for that. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team day.
Locked On Nets, it's your boy Marcus Barahal here, your host today with Josh. He's traveling for work. He will luckily though be back for our next podcast, which will be released hopefully tonight, maybe tomorrow morning or tomorrow night, depending on our schedules. But we are both going to the game tonight, game three between Brooklyn and Philadelphia. So that's going to be super exciting. We're taking former co-host of this podcast, Gavin Shaw, along with us. He's kind of acting like our son in this instance, even though Gavin kind of is like the parent of this podcast because he kind of gave birth to it in a way. He was here before me. But all that being said, that metaphor kind of got twisted. Josh and I will be at Game 3, so if you see us, say hi. If not, don't say hi because you won't see us. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the game tonight, talking about some adjustments, talking about some comments that perked my ears up. There's kind of been a lot of time, it feels like, between game two and three, and it's only been 2 days, but in the playoffs, when you're kind of geared up for one team, and it's just one series that you're focusing on, you're not looking at the standings anymore, you don't really care how the other series are going. It's really just about Brooklyn Nets basketball 24-7, and when there's no game between Monday and Thursday, it kind of, a lot piles up. It kind of almost feels like Super Bowl week in the NFL, where there's 2 weeks between the conference championship and the Super Bowl, and just like stuff kind of piles up. There's a ton of stories, a ton of stuff to talk about right now, and guys have, I guess, extra media availability just because there's fewer teams, so more reporters are kind of gathered up. Like all the Knicks reporters, for instance, don't have anything to talk about right now just because the team is no longer playing basketball games. But so they're kind of probably gathered around with Brooklyn, and so that leads to more stories, more quotes. I'll get into some of those in a little bit. But first, I'm going to talk about adjustments. Josh and I highlighted some stuff, but just to really like hammer it again and have our points of view clear before the game. You know, we don't want to be these reactionary take artists like some people out there. Not going to name names because I don't have anyone in mind, but I think it's important that we kind of lay out what we think should happen, and then we'll see how Kenny Atkinson does in the game tonight, and we'll see what adjustments, if any, were made, and we'll just see, yeah. But so, for Brooklyn, I think Josh and I have talked about it. We highlighted it before the series. Keith Pompey, when he was on, talked about this guy's importance. It's Spencer Dinwiddie. I think he is the biggest key for Brooklyn offensively in this series, just because at this point, you kind of know what you're going to get from D'Angelo Russell game in, game out. Even Caris LeVert has gotten more consistent the last couple weeks, coming back from injury and whatnot. But with Dinwiddie, it feels like he knows how to attack this Philadelphia defense. It feels like he is just the right combination of, he has like the speed of a LeVert type, but he also has the patience of a D'Angelo Russell type. And he kind of combines the best of both of those players when he's operating at his peak, which he kind of has been these first couple games. I know the scoring numbers aren't crazy. Like, he dropped 18 in the win in game one and then 19 in the loss in game two, and he shot under 50% for the series so far. But it's just been the ease with which he's scored, and he's shot the ball well from the outside. He's made five threes on 12 attempts, and he's kind of just been penetrating almost at will and just kind of getting whatever shot he wants. Now, those shots aren't going to fall 100% of the time, obviously, but just his ability to get into space and kind of pull Philadelphia's big men out, guys like Embiid, who is a great defender, but is obviously at least somewhat hampered by that knee injury, and so he's not as willing to kind of guard in space and play maybe help defense as good as he would be if he were fully healthy. And Boban, obviously, who is massive but not very quick, and so Dinwiddie's done a great job of exploiting those matchups when he gets the switch, and also exploiting smaller guys like J.J. Redick in game one and just going right at him. Same thing with T.J. McConnell. And I point him out as the key because, like I said, you know what you're getting from D'Angelo Russell, and you somewhat, I guess, know what you're getting from LeVert. And if two of those guys are firing at the same time, Josh and I have talked about this, but that just puts extra pressure on Philly's defense, and it makes a guy like J.J. Redick have to defend on ball if he wants to stay on the court, which is what happened in game one, and he's just not capable of doing that. I think he's a great off-ball defender, as we saw in game two. He kind of limited Joe Harris, and when he's able to do that, it kind of opens up Philly's offense on the other end, because then he spaces the floor just about as well as anyone in the league can, just because of his outside shooting. So Dinwiddie's a big key on offense. Another guy, I mentioned you kind of know what you're getting from him, but D'Angelo Russell, I think Nets fans probably are, you're not upset with what you've gotten from D'Lo in these first two games. He's averaging 21 points in the series, only three assists, which is a little upsetting, and four turnovers, but it just, he hasn't exploded. He had a good third quarter in the game one, but he struggled mightily in the first half, and he had 26 points, but it took him 25 shots to get it. And then in game two, 16 points on 16 shots. So he hasn't been hyper efficient in these first two games. So it's not like he's played badly or anything. I just think that when he's like very clearly become the Nets' best player, he's an all-star, he wants all this on his shoulders, it seems like. And I think he is willing to accept all the pressure and everything that comes with being the leader of a playoff team. I think you just want a little bit more from him, either from a standpoint of creating a little bit more for his teammates, just looking at those assist numbers, or if that's from increasing his efficiency a little bit. I think that the offense has been great, honestly, these first two games. The offense isn't the problem, but at the same time, you want a little bit more efficiency, and cutting down those turnovers would be great also. Shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball, though, one big X factor who was missing in game two was Jared Dudley, who has kind of gone in and out of the rotation throughout the year, but it's become clear that he's essential to the Nets defense in the last couple games of the season and also in game one of this series. And we saw what happens when he was not in the lineup in game two. Ben Simmons just kind of went off. And I want to talk about a quote that Jared Dudley gave earlier today when talking to Stephon Bondi of the Daily News, where he said that Ben Simmons is a great player in transition, and once you get him into half court, he's average. And while that sounds like it's a diss, which it probably is, at least somewhat of some shade from Dudley, I don't think it's inaccurate. I mean, in game one, Dudley guarded Ben Simmons on 22 possessions, and Simmons scored 2 points on those 22 possessions. So he kind of knows what to do against him defensively. And I think in game two, the big difference for Ben Simmons offensively, especially early, was that he was able to get out in transition off those Nets turnovers, like I mentioned, and off of misses, and just kind of push the pace. And when he's running full speed, he's huge for a guy with his vision and his ability to kind of get through the paint and finish inside through contact is what's made him a possible elite player going forward. But when it gets into the half court and things get bogged down, the spacing gets cramped, and especially if the Nets can do to Redick what they did in game one, the spacing is even more cramped, and it just kind of negates all of what makes Simmons special, which is the fact that he's a great player in space, which is, I guess, what Dudley was trying to say. So I don't think Dudley's comments were out of line at all. I think calling Ben Simmons average in the half court might honestly even be like a compliment offensively, just because he's got great vision, just because, or not just because, but partially due to his height for his position. But beyond that, like, he's not shooting jumpers. He can get into the paint, but it's like, I don't know. He's not the best finisher from like mid-range. He doesn't have that touch yet. He's good inside, he's good in the paint, and he's good at finding his teammates. And both of those things are kind of best utilized in space and in transition. So I think for Brooklyn, a big key is going to be limiting those transition opportunities off of rebounds and trying to limit turnovers as much as you can. Or if there are turnovers, hoping that they're dead ball turnovers and you kind of are able to get your defense back and set up. So those are kind of my biggest things that I'm looking for. I'll be back in segment two to talk about some more comments. There was some stuff at the press conference that I want to get into, so I'll be back to talk about that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
We got a new sponsor for the pod, y'all, and that is our friends at Wyze. W-Y-Z-E, but they call it Wyze because it's a Wyze camera. It is the indoor camera that does it all. It's packed with premium features that allows you to see everything in your house from anywhere for only $20. Images so clear you won't miss a thing. They have it night vision. They have it two-way audio, 1080 full HD. They got it all. Wyze's mission is to cut out the channel fat by selling directly from their own website. They want to bring amazing smart home products accessible to everyone. Check in your home anytime with Wyze's app live stream. Important to note, that is a free rolling 14-day cloud storage on these cameras, as well as no subscriptions. For $20 a camera, you can do anything. You can watch your kids destroy your house. Marcus, I'm not sure if you have any kids recently that I don't know about, but you could watch them destroy your house.
I do not.
You can do bird watching. Really, you can do it all. I can watch my roommates fight without when I'm not there, and I love watching them fight. So that's kind of going to be my big draw. And for just $10 more, Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast. Your camera should, too. Go to wyze.com/locked. That's wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price.
Segment two here, back with you. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal. Feel free to download this podcast from the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcasts. No judgment. It's a no judgment zone here, a catchphrase that we came up with. So if any gyms out there are using it, please do not sue us. Anyway, back to the Brooklyn Nets. One question I had that I was just kind of thinking about is related to the officiating and how this series is going to be called going forward. There have been a few techs in the series already. There were a couple flagrants, obviously, in Game 2, most notably that Joel Embiid elbow to the face of Jared Allen. So just, I was kind of wondering what to expect from the officials, I guess, in this Game 3, because in Game 1, it felt like Philly kind of got the benefit of the doubt with a lot of the calls, and even though the Nets won, the Sixers attempted a ton of free throws, and it felt like things weren't necessarily balanced. In Game 2, I thought it was a little better, notwithstanding that one call against Embiid where they called a flagrant 1, and I think it could have been a flagrant 2. Outside of that, I felt like the officiating was mostly pretty fair in Game 2. So I'm just wondering where that will trend in Game 3, because obviously home teams usually get the benefit of the calls more often than not. Just because, and it's not like not to accuse any of the referees of anything nefarious, but it's just like when there's a stadium of 20,000 people booing you on a call, you're probably at least subconsciously more likely going to call something the next time that makes it so that that doesn't happen to you, so that you don't just get boos rained down on you constantly. So I think that that's definitely a factor. But at the same time, if there was to be something nefarious, it would probably be in the favor of Philadelphia, just because from a perspective of news and from the league's perspective, it's probably better to have Philly advance in the series and to have kind of another threat in the East, just because if it were, and obviously this isn't, I don't think this is going to happen, just because there's way too many moving pieces and because I do still believe in the Toronto Raptors, but like when the Nets and the Magic both won their game ones of their first round series, and it was like, oh boy, like this probably isn't going to happen, but like it could be Nets Magic in round two, which would mean that one of those teams is in the conference finals. Like I don't think that the NBA wants that. No shots at either of these two franchises. Obviously, I think Nets fans especially know how well that the Magic have been playing these last couple weeks, because just from watching the standings, you saw them kind of move up rapidly, and it felt like they were going to maybe catch Brooklyn and kick them out of the playoffs at a certain point. So both of these teams have played really well, and they're both super deserving playoff teams, as we've seen already. But I think it's pretty clear that if like the NBA had any kind of like shadow government that was influencing the matchups, they would want probably like a like Milwaukee-Toronto or Milwaukee-Philly or Boston-Philly, Boston-Toronto. They want those top four teams to all advance, I would think. So from that perspective, it could be maybe leading to some people thinking that the officiating could be biased towards Philly. But like I said, that's why I'm so interested in Game 3, because it's usually the home team that benefits from the calls. So we'll see how Game 3 is officiated. I'm sure Josh and I will get a firsthand look at the typical fans' perspective when we're there in attendance. So that should be good. But I mentioned Joel Embiid. And in his press conference after Game 2 with Ben Simmons, He was asked about the elbow that he threw at Jared Allen, and it just, I don't know. He apologized, obviously, which is the correct thing to do, but he was laughing. Ben Simmons was laughing. They were in like a very jokey, silly kind of mood, which I guess, you know, you're basking in the glow of a win on your home floor in front of your fans, so maybe that's had something to do with it, but just it just didn't seem particularly classy or well thought out on either of their parts. And Embiid kind of in the post-game interview is saying like, oh, Ben's laughing because I'm usually not this humble, blah blah blah, because he's apologizing. But I don't know, it felt like they were laughing like kind of right from the jump, so I don't know that I necessarily buy that. I think that it's possible that they're just kind of trying to clown Jared Allen, which, I mean, whatever, honestly. Like, it reminded me, it gave me flashbacks to the Heat-Mavericks series in the 2011 finals where LeBron and D-Wade were kind of clowning Dirk Nowitzki for his coughing and, like, being sick, and they were, like, fake coughing at the press conference. It just felt kind of childish and unnecessary. And the Nets kind of had a few different reactions to this. Most of the team kind of, like, played it pretty safe and media savvy, and we're just kind of like, yeah, like, we're not really focused on that, we're focused on the game, blah blah blah. But Caris LeVert did say that the team did not really like seeing this from Joel Embiid. He said that they thought it was kind of disrespectful, and this was to Ian Begley of ESPN.com. and so I do kind of agree with LeVert, and I think he's probably speaking for the team as a whole, and just kind of like, guys don't really want to say that because that's, it's just kind of a distraction to the game that's on the court. But at the same time, it is a story, and I think Spencer Dinwiddie had a good point when he said that if the guys had been reversed and if it was Jared Allen who threw the elbow into Joel Embiid, Dinwiddie said that he thought that Allen would get ejected if that had happened the other way. And I tend to agree with that. But at the same time, I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing for the league, just because from a marketing perspective, like I was just talking about, you want those guys out there. And like, I know how pissed a lot of Warriors fans got when Draymond got ejected for his hit, or not even hit, it was like a kick towards LeBron's groin in the 2016 finals. And it's like that kind of thing, like you don't really want the game to be decided by the officiating. And obviously with a play like this and with that other play, it's really that the players are making the officials have to make these calls. They're not just like, it's not like the refs are just flying in saying like, oh, we want that guy out, we want this guy out. It's that something happens that causes them to respond the way that they are. They're not just making this up on the spot. But in regards to this Embiid play, I do think it could have changed the whole series, because if he didn't play in that second half, who knows if Philly goes on that run in the third quarter. It was obviously a one-point game at halftime. So this could have swung the game, which could have swung the series, which could have swung the season for Brooklyn. Time will tell, but just going forward, I think that the officiating in general is probably going to be a little bit tighter, which who knows which side that'll benefit. Probably whichever team is able to attack more and kind of draw more fouls and get into the bonus quickly. So hopefully Brooklyn's guards can get in the paint and penetrate and cause a ruckus in there and maybe get Embiid pulled from the game early with a few fouls. But that's going to do it for segment two. Coming up in segment three, I will be talking about what I'm expecting from the crowd and the atmosphere. I mentioned it a few times. Josh and I will be in attendance for this game. I don't think either of us has been to a playoff game in a very long time. I know for me, I haven't gone since Nets-Knicks in 2004, so looking forward to that, and I'll talk about it in segment three coming up. Segment three here on Locked on Nets. I mentioned it at the tail end of the last segment, but I'm very excited to be going to the game tonight. I know Josh is too, and I'm sure we will relay that excitement to you, the listeners, coming up in our next podcast. Hopefully, we are recapping a Brooklyn Nets win. But regardless, I think it'll be super cool to be in the building. Like I said, the only previous playoff game that I'd been to was Nets-Knicks in 2004. I was 8.5 years old at the time, and I think my mom got tickets through her work, like someone that she, like one of her bosses or something, just happened to have like an extra two tickets, and so we got to go. We were sitting super high up, but it was still an awesome time, and just like feeling the energy was insane. Like being a Knicks fan who didn't go to a ton of Knicks games and has kind of gone to Sixer games when they were bad because the tickets were cheap, and has now gone to a lot more Nets games over the last year and a half just because both I like the team and also because tickets were just way cheaper than at MSG. You see a lot of different types of games, and I think that when it's like a big team coming to town, it can kind of get to that playoff atmosphere at times, but it was just a completely different thing, that game that I went to, and maybe that's partially like childhood nostalgia, but I do think that there is a different vibe in the playoffs. The games just mean so much when, you know, it only takes four losses to eliminate you, or it only takes four wins to kind of bring your team to the next level. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what the crowd will be like at Barclays, and I know Josh and I will be screaming, so maybe the next podcast we might have to make it short depending on how our voices are, but yeah, just really looking forward to that and excited to see what the crowd has in store and what the team has in store, because I know that a lot of those guys, like D'Angelo Russell, is a real showman. I know he's going to want to put on something special for this team's first playoff home game since 2015, his first playoff home game of his career. So expecting a lot out of him and a lot out of the whole team just to kind of step up and show the national stage. Like the team, they didn't get embarrassed in game two, but it was definitely not the best performance. And I know, like, with all these games on national TV, you do kind of want to put your best foot forward. And if you go down, you want to go down fighting. So hopefully the Nets come out with a lot of fight, because I think that they're going to need to start strong to kind of like put a damper on Philly's confidence right now. I think Philly probably is feeling themselves a little after game two, which is deserved. I mean, you put up 51 points in a quarter in the playoffs, which I think tied like an NBA record. Obviously that's an impressive accomplishment, so no shots at them for that, but just like, I think that they're a team that can kind of crumble if they are playing from behind. I don't know that they necessarily have the mental stamina or like the veteran leadership to kind of bring themselves back from a deficit, and I think we saw that in game one where Brooklyn got up early. They had that run, the 12-0 run at the end of the first quarter, which put them up by 9. And from there, like, Philly had a little run in the third quarter where they cut it to 2, but they never retook the lead, and it frankly felt like the Nets were in control the whole time. And so I think that's a big key for the Nets, is starting out strong. There's probably going to be some jitters the first minute or two playing in front of the home crowd, but I think if they can keep that calm, and if Kenny can kind of manage those guys to kind of keep them cool but locked in and focused, I think that this could be a big day for the Brooklyn Nets. So I'm hopeful. I hope you're hopeful. And I'm looking forward to talking to you guys again after this game. Josh and I will be back. We'll see about if we want to record rapidly right after the game or if we want to take our time and put one out on Friday or Saturday. But stay tuned for that. Follow us at Locked On Nets, I guess, for the latest updates. You can follow me at Marcus Barahal or follow Josh at JMBass_. I realize I said or, but it's an and or. You know, if you want to follow both of us, feel free. We tweet a lot of different things. Whatever kind of content you want, we've got ready for you. So be sure to do that, and we will speak to you soon. Josh will be back on the next podcast with me. We might bring Gavin in, depending on how he behaves. So, and how much Josh can tolerate. So we'll see. Stay tuned, and we'll be back soon. Until then, be well. Bye.